Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
October 14th, 2011, the Norris Group returned with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate. An expert lineup of industry specialists joined Bruce Norris to discuss current industry regulation, head-scratching legislation, and the opportunities emerging for savvy real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Foreclosure Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops with President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskiest, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Real Wealth Networks, Fry Wiles, MVT Productions, and White House Catering. The event video can be found on isurvived2011.com.
I was thinking, if I was an appraiser that had gone to sleep in 2007 and woke up in 2010, I would have been quite surprised at what happened.
You'd be in culture shock, I think.
Yeah, and you'd have your income divided by multiples, because you would have the assumption that you must be doing something crooked if you have a relationship, and you also now have to have a middle person taking half of your fee.
That's right.
And that would be very frustrating. Has the industry lost some of the people that would just say, you know what, I'm not interested in that anymore?
Absolutely. The statistics on renewal for our state certification requirements have seen that in some states that renewal rate is as low as 30 or 40% of what it had been before. And, you know, just basically, just think about yourself. You can't continue to support your family doing what you're trained to do and what you have the expertise to do. Then you have to look for something else. Mm-hmm. And that's what so many of our members have had to do. It's extremely difficult to retrain yourself to work in a lending environment where your expertise, your education, your qualifications really don't mean that much to the person or persons that you're communicating with. And that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate for the consumer, most especially.
We had an interesting appraisal that happened. I wasn't going to mention this, but it happened the opposite way, where someone with no experience in a very unusual area, where you got a lot of money for a certain located lot, let's say. Well, there was a $1.3 million comp for the model match house, but they had the right location and we did not. And we had a home for sale for about $700,000 for 90 days, which would kind of give you an idea it's not worth 1.3. But when we went pending, the home was appraised for $1.3 million because it was a model match house, and somebody come in from out of the area. I think it was, honestly, Bakersfield. They didn't have a clue that that mattered there. And believe me, that locked in that sale, though.
I guess you have to take it again.
Yeah. Boy, what a deal. What's the intent? I mean, just like in the mortgage side of it, the intent seems to be, let's protect. Okay, with the appraisal management company, what is their function? And are they really just supposed to make sure that appraisal independence is accomplished? Is that the idea?
I think that's the main function. It was intended to be the main function. Unfortunately, I think it's become a clearinghouse for driving fees lower. Of course, that management company is going to make that money. And, you know, what we find is many, many consumers are confronted when they close a loan with an amount for an appraisal that includes not only the appraiser's fee, but also the management company fee. And sometimes the management company fee is more than what the appraiser is actually making on that particular sale. And I think I related to you a personal incident where I had a friend who called and asked me, is $100 the usual and customary fee in Little Rock for residential appraisal? And I said, you know, it sounds a little high. Why don't you call that appraiser? And she did. And she found out that a good part of the fee that she was going to be paying for the appraisal was actually going to the management company and not to the appraiser. And so this is huge.
What does the management company do to earn their cut?
They engage the appraiser.
Do we need one of those on here? That'd be fun.
They engage the appraiser, and they actually are responsible for the give and take, the documentation, securing the appraisal, getting the appraisal back to the file, getting it to the lender. So they're really a firewall, a middleman, so to speak.
So they take an email and forward it?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
They get sent.
Okay. But they have to have expertise as appraisers, I'm sure.
Well, not necessarily. Not necessarily. In a lot of states, like in Arkansas, and I'm sure in California, they have certain requirements for AMCs. The Appraisal Institute has been very, very active in trying to monitor the appraisal management companies and to try to get some kind of regulation process, some bonding, some kind of law that supports the appraiser in the event that there is some kind of argument with regard to fee, with regard to process. In some states they're not regulated at all. In others they are closely regulated.
Now, that brings up a confusing situation. Do you have national and state regulations that overlap, contradict, and make it confusing?
Yes.
And you're in 30-some states?
We're in 29 states. We follow 29 states' worth of appraisal regs, fees, forms, disclosures, predatory lending. The variation is pretty stunning.
At Dodd-Frank, I thought that they had tried to solve the reasonable fee, or what is the word? Reasonable fee.
Reasonable and customary.
Reasonable and customary fee. Has that changed in practice, where now the appraiser is getting paid what they used to?
No.
No.
That is still a huge issue. And when I testified before the Congressional Subcommittee in July, that's one of the things that I continue to talk about with that subcommittee. The idea of reasonable and customary, I think the intent of Dodd-Frank was never to include the AMC fee in the reasonable and customary estimation.
No.
And the Appraisal Institute has done a lot of research and a lot of study, and we have looked at VA schedules and others to try to help these AMCs and to try to help the Congressional Subcommittee take a look at what a reasonable and customary fee might be to an appraiser. Our advocacy is that we would like to see that HUD-1 form simply separate those fees.
Sure.
And that the appraisal fee is on one line and one transparent number, and that the appraisal management fee be another. And certainly an appraiser needs to be paid for the time, the education, the professionalism that they have and that they bring to the experience. And the AMC should be compensated for the work that it's doing also.
Now, there's pretty severe fines for not paying reasonable fees, right?
Should be.
In the legislation, gets into the millions.
Absolutely.
Has any of those fines ever been levied?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I wanted some juicy information. What about the usage of, I'll start with this one. Undue pressure. It certainly did exist. Okay. And it's good that it doesn't. I get the feeling that undue pressure exists now on the back end. I feel like you have willing buyers saying, this is the house we want at the price we want it, and somewhere along the line there's pressure that gets it to be less than that. And I don't know if it's the review appraisal process and an automated system, or it's an underwriter that says, let's just lower it. And I really don't know, but I know as a seller, I'm confused sometimes why it comes back less, and it's not reasonable. The definition, I've had training as an appraiser, so I've got that definition down as far as somebody looking out for their own best interest. So a seller checks out the market and goes pending. To me, that's a comp. Now, if it disagrees with all the other comps severely, okay, that's maybe a problem. But when it really doesn't, comes back to the heart of our business. We fix houses. And we might spend $30,000, and we don't think, well, we automatically get $50,000 for that. But there's times where a buyer looks at that and says, well, first of all, we wouldn't be able to do it for 30, and a 20 grand price difference at 4% interest is so minimal per month that the answer is we'll take that over this one. And when you're 70% comps against REOs and short sales, that, and that's what's the problem. And I guess going back to, how are these reviewed? Because if someone doesn't show up and say, oh, this is a comp, but it doesn't have a kitchen, I mean, that's a problem. And you can't get the truth with the push of a button.
Right. And I think that that points out the need for local market expertise, points out the need for people who are trained professionals, points out the need for people who are trained to go to the market, to interview the buyer and the seller, to investigate the comparables, and to make sure they are comparables. That's first. Secondly, I think that a lot of appraisers, as they begin to turn in their appraisal reports, face a lot of undue pressure, added comparables, for example, extra questions, more and more scrutiny placed on their valuation and their judgment.
And if they, let's say for some reason the pressure is there or a review appraiser disagrees, could they lose business because they came in at a higher number than the review appraiser?
You know, I think that's probably something that might happen on some basis. But again, you know, it falls to the appraiser to defend himself over and over and over again.
Okay.
And if the information is there and the valuation has been done to the best of that appraiser's ability, you just get to the point in time where you just have to say, this is it. This is all I can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have somebody, oftentimes, when that situation confronts us, we'll say, could I pick you up? Could we drive those comps? Could you take a look at them? A lot of times, you're talking to somebody who's sitting at a desk.
Yes.
Who never looks at that property.
Exactly.
Who never goes to that particular comparable. Who never inspects the interior. Who doesn't have any information about it. It's a communication problem sometimes because as an appraiser and as a person who's writing that report, the communication skill needs to be there to convey the extraordinary measures you may or may not have taken to include that sale and why. So, you know, it is a difficult environment and it's very, very difficult sometimes to meet the requirements that are piled on, that are additional, and really seem to target us in terms of final valuation result.
You know, you do have underwriting guidelines and you do have some investor overlays that are now causing some of this challenge where, you know, you might have an investor that requires that two comps be outside the community. And outside the community means possibly a foreclosure. This is one of the home builders' one of their top four issues is really getting a dialogue going as we see some of these submarkets starting to heal and prices starting to stabilize. And if you think about comps, they have to be closed. So you're always looking backwards. So how do we move forward? How do we recognize that in a declining area, you might have a very stable submarket? And how do you recognize that some investors want, you know, four comps or six comps or justify the time, you know, valuation kind of thing? And so it becomes very complex when you combine both the appraiser's work and then an underwriter's work on top of it.
You know, I'll give you an example of one, and it really changed our business model, so this is why it's significant to mention. We bought a property in Moreno Valley for $52,000, and it was without a kitchen and so forth, and we fixed it for $25,000, something like that. We put up for sale, went pending for $123,000, had seven offers within 2 days. And that's a pretty good statement of market value. We apparently hit the number correctly. The appraisal came in $100,000. The review appraiser came in at $80,000. And so we consequently kept it as a rental. At $1,100 and rented it in 1 day because it looked like that picture. The statement basically by the appraisal said that given $100,000 at 5%, that my rental payment was worth twice as much as the value when you consider what it was worth in mortgage payment. And that's an amazing statement. And what it prevented was us fixing the next 50 properties in Moreno Valley, because what it told us was due to the changes that HVC brought in, the appraiser was incapable of coming to that decision because no one would allow him to do it, even though the buyer said, yep. And that's a challenge for our industry right now, especially in those areas that have the overwhelming vacant REO as the comp. And we're trying to figure out how to do a service and get paid for it at the same time. So, any suggestions? More comps in the area, maybe. That's one of the reasons why we concentrate in an area, by the way.
Cash sales.
Well, because we provide our own evidence that decision has been made before, which is kind of what you're stuck with as an appraiser. You have to have evidence that somebody made that decision.
Right, and I think that one of the other things that points out is that a relationship with the purchaser and with the person who is going to be working with that mortgage and some conversation and some dialogue on the front end certainly might help to solve some of those problems. You know, we're beginning to look at how we can develop some relationships in, as Deborah said, submarkets that would allow us to try to take a look at what we have in the market we're working in. And I think that the technique, the theory, the ideas coming forward are pretty new. And, you know, they may have a lot of risk in them for a lot of lenders. And, you know, it goes back to educating both the lender, the appraiser, purchaser, the investor in what's going on in that market and how we can handle some of the consequences of the downturn that we've seen.
And I think that's one of the things that I think is difficult with HVCC. The spirit of the HVC was right on target, you know, not doing anything to exert undue influence on an appraiser. On the other hand, it's now law, and having those conversations, good constructive conversations, are very delicate, and you have to be very careful and very thoughtful. And there's a protocol anymore to have an appropriate dialogue with an appraiser as you're trying to get to the right place. So yeah. That's where the law has made it. Again, we're still trying to figure out how to work collaboratively.
Yeah, it's viewed as coercion, and then it maybe could just be better information, and that would be good
right.
to know. When is an appraisal management company not necessary? Is there ever?
Well, sure.
Oh, I mean, I really don't know.
Pardon?
In other words, when do they don't have to be in the middle?
We don't use an appraisal management company.
You don't
company.
Ever use an appraisal management company. It's not forced on you on your lender. I guess that would make sense.
No, I think you have to be a reasonably large lender if you want to go direct to the independent appraiser, which our company does. We have a national subdivision processing department, so everything that has to do with property is done by a department that's outside of the origination, the processing, the underwriting, the closing. So as long as you can set up an arm's-length environment, you don't have to use an AMC.
Okay.
Most companies, though, would use that as their way to ensure arm's-length.
Right, and to stay within the law. And I think that's a big factor with a lot of lenders right now. They sure don't want to cross that line.
Okay. There's definitely a sense that there's some rotation system that's necessary. I've heard that said to us. Is that true? I mean, where it's just like no matter what the experience level or knowledge of an area, it's just that person's turn to get an appraisal?
We do a 1 in 5 rotation in every submarket. We probably have about 300 appraisers nationally that we use. So, yeah, it's very important not to use one person solely for a community.
That would be viewed as
that
like a team partner or something?
Basically, all that appraiser's business would be dependent upon us giving, and so we have to do at least a 1 in 5 rotation is how we've set up our due diligence.
Okay. And you feel like all 5 of those are equally competent or they wouldn't be there? Or?
Oh, absolutely. We'll review the appraisals, we'll review for error, we'll review for any kind of quality control audits, and yeah, very much we would make sure that we've got qualified individuals on our appraiser panel.
And I think in that environment, probably you have more control over the quality of the appraiser. And that's one of the things that we don't find happening with a lot of the AMCs. They'll gravitate toward cheap and quick, and possibly overlook the qualifications that the appraiser has, that local market expertise, which I said before is extremely important, really doesn't matter. It's the person who's willing to travel, to get that appraisal done, to turn it in. Maybe a quick turnaround time might be a day, day and a half. You know, there's no way that if you're not familiar with the market, you can march in, collect the comparables, talk with the buyers and the sellers, get a sense of what's going on in that market, make that inspection, get a feel for what that property contributes, what its overall attributes are in relationship to the others that are on the market or the other sales that have occurred. Go back, make that appraisal, write it, convey it, etc. in that quick time. Just can't do it.
It's hard to want to do that if you're getting paid half of the appraisal
fee.
Sure. It may not even be feasible to spend as much time because you just couldn't possibly do it.
Right. You might just go to multi-list and get a couple of comps and move on.
I think that's the appraiser we're getting. Yep. what's your feeling about broker price opinions? I'm sure this will raise some excitement.
Well, you know, one of the things about the broker price opinion is, in some instances, it might be a good vehicle. But for mortgage lending purposes, for decisions that a lender has to make, by and large, those opinions are unregulated. You know, an appraisal that is put forth and signed by a state-certified appraiser has some education. We're unbiased. We're a third party out there taking a look at the property. We really don't have anything more in the game than just to report and analyze that market. Now, sometimes I don't think that in terms of a broker price opinion, you have that disinterested person. They're an advocate for the property owner, for another entity, and certainly not regulated like the appraiser is in terms of adherence to USPAP, adherence to certain educational requirements. There's so many things that are missing. And the broker price opinion might have its place in some part of the real estate picture, but certainly not in terms of making a decision to buy or sell. And you know, it's a difference. It's a different approach. It's a different mindset. It's a different thought, and it should be for a different use.
It seems like when there's an REO created now, that there's a series of things that happen, including a couple of BPOs and an appraisal.
Yes.
I'm not sure which one they weigh heavier or not, but there's evidence that everybody's getting a turn at saying what the value is. Do you see anything in Dodd-Frank or the changes in qualified mortgage that threaten a 30-year mortgage for some of the stratuses of loans? I'm just curious if we're going to have the supply of money that wants to go out that long.
Yeah, I don't probably see anything in the QM or the QRM that would specifically attack the 30-year mortgage. I think for the most part, that's certainly been a product that housing in America has depended on for many, many, many years.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2011. Adrenaline Athletics, Caldwell Banker Pioneer Real Estate, Conaway and Conaway, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Keller Williams of Corona, Keystone CPA, Kukan and Clark Partners LLC, Las Brisas Escrow, Lievis Associates, Mike Cantu, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Pacific Sunrise Mortgage, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Raven Paul and Company, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Board of Realtors, Stars Photography, UDirect IRA, Wilson Investment Properties, Tony Alvarez, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza. Visit isurvived2011.com for more details.